Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Jessie Q. Sutanto. She is the author of the new novel, Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers. She is also the author of several other novels, including the award-winning best-selling Dao A for Aunties. Well, that was unexpected. The Obsession and Theo Tan and the Fox Spirit. Jessie grew up shuttling back and forth between Indonesia, Singapore, and Oxford, and she considers all three places her home. She has a master's degree from Oxford University. And Jessie, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Jessie, I will tell you from the minute I started reading Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers, I started smiling. Because the way you write that character, the way you describe her, her daily routine, getting up at 4:30 a.m. every single morning, doing the power walk, sending inspirational texts to her son, Tilbert. I do want to talk to you about how this character, Vera Wang, who owns a tea house in Chinatown in San Francisco, goes in to open a shop one day and there's a dead man on the floor. There is a very interesting background to you deciding to write this novel, because you say in the acknowledgments you actually had other projects ahead of it, but the powers that be saw this novel as one that they really wanted to get out. So talk about that experience.
So after writing Dial A for Aunties and then the sequel and then another sequel, I knew that I was really comfortable writing about like the, elderly Chinese aunties. And then I thought, well, I kind of want to have like a main character who is an elderly Chinese auntie. And then I thought, that would be, what would be really fun is if she finds a dead body and then she has to solve the murder. So that was all I kind of started out with. And then my friend encouraged me to expand that a little into a pitch. So I did. I think I came up with like 3 to 5 paragraphs about it. And I sent that to my agent. My agent got really excited and sent it to my publishing house. And then the publishing team got really excited. And then they were, before I knew it, they were like, we're going to push everything else back. How fast can you write this? And I was like, I don't even have a plot. I don't know why, like, who is this dead guy? I don't know anything about him. I don't know who killed him. And they were like, we have faith in you. It'll be fine. So, so we pushed everything back so that I could write Vera. And thankfully, it's all worked out for the best.
So who was the second character you created after Vera?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think it was Sana. Because I wanted to insert myself into the book. And I'm not Sana, but I am her mom, because her mom writes like multiple books a year and is like really obnoxious about it. And, she's always like telling her daughter, like, there's no such thing as a writer's block. It's all just in your mind. So that's my self-insert.
You got your master's in creative writing from Oxford University. How did that influence how you write your novels? Were you writing novels before you got your master's degree, or did you start writing your novels after you got your master's degree?
No, I started after I got the master's degree. Before that, I would write shorter works, like just compositions and stuff. I had never written anything as long as a novel. So I would say, my course helped to push me into writing a longer work, because part of the final project was that we had to write, I think it was, I want to say 30,000 words, maybe. But yeah, so that was the longest thing that I had written up to that point. And I think it really pushed us very hard. The course was a pretty intense one. You know, it really made me more comfortable with workshop, like having my work workshopped, and then also critiquing like other people's works. Just gave me an idea of what to look out for and things like that. Plus, it was in the magical city of Oxford, so that didn't hurt.
I can imagine that. So your novels are what I would call, and you can correct me, sort of cozy novels. They're light. The characters have a sense of humor. It's not overly mm-hmm. serious. Were you mm-hmm. always looking, when you were getting your master's in creative writing, were you looking to occupy that space, or did you sort of stumble into it?
No, I definitely stumbled into it, because when I first started writing, I was writing more like suspense or dark fantasy, mostly like dark suspense, I would say, because I'm very dark and deep and mysterious. But after writing in that genre for a while, my then agent was like, hey, there's a new imprint, you know, they're looking for diverse voices, and they want middle grade fantasy. So I started writing middle grade fantasy. And when you write middle grade, which is for kids around like between 10 to like 13 years old, you really need a lot of humor in it. And I realized that I actually love writing humor. And so after writing middle grade, that was when I wrote Dial A for Aunties. And that came really naturally. I was like, oh, wow, you know, it's so fun writing this genre. I'm actually laughing out loud as I am writing. So,
I can tell from reading Vera Wang that you must have had quite a few smiles and laughing out loud when writing that novel. But let's talk about Marshall Chen, the victim. Mm-hmm. And he is described by his twin, Oliver. My brother was maybe the most charismatic person I've ever come across, but he was also the most cruel. How do you write the character of the person murdered?
So I knew that going into Vera, I knew that I wanted five different points of view and that four of them were going to be suspect. And I was like, why would four people be suspects, you know, unless the person who died was just so horrible in every way possible. So I knew that these four people, they each has to have like a motive to kill him. And that's why, you know, I made him so unsavory.
Do you have a lot of fun when writing unsavory characters? Does it appeal to the dark side of you?
Yeah, totally. It's so fun. And also I feel that a very good villain is someone who is charismatic, who people wouldn't necessarily know is a bad person. That if you've only met them like a handful of times, you would go away thinking, "Aw, they're so nice," or, you know, you should be taken in by their charm, I think.
So the owner of the tea shop name is actually Vera Wang, but Vera Wang is the name of the tea shop, and that's a famous designer, right?
Yes.
Her husband's died a couple of years ago. The shop doesn't have hardly any customers, but mm-hmm. she is relentlessly positive. Was there anybody in your family or members of your family that inspired the character of Vera Wang?
Oh, yeah, totally. I dedicated the book to my mom because Vera is just basically my mom with the dial, you know, turned up to 100. and my mom has read it. I was really nervous to have her read it because I was like, I wrote a book about you. And she read it and she finished it in like under 2 days and was like, I approve of this one. Because she is not shy about telling me, you know, which of my books she disapproves of.
Your mom isn't shy at all. I saw this video she made to promote the book, about a 30, 40 second video with a cutout character.
Yeah.
So how did your mom get involved in the marketing of your book? She's got a great personality. It was just so delightful watching her promote your book.
Yeah, I just asked her and, you know, we had such a good time like shooting these videos because we just kept cracking up. I actually have a bloopers reel that I'm going to post sometime soon where it's just her trying to say the lines and then bursting out laughing.
So let's talk about the suspects. You have Vera place an ad, mm-hmm. the obituary, mm-hmm. and people just start showing up. What's interesting is when we get the point of view of the characters, the suspects are showing up at her shop. You have them all, almost all of them comment on her shop and how basically lonely Vera is and how sort of they're looking at the shop and they're saying, it doesn't look like I have a lot of characters, a lot of people coming in. So talk about your decision to create characters who, when they're going into the shop, because they're all associated with the late Marshall Chen one way or the other, but you give us a view of the shop through their eyes.
So I did my undergrad in Berkeley. And on some weekends, we would go to San Francisco and to Chinatown. And I noticed that there were a lot of shops at the time. I'm not sure what San Francisco Chinatown is like now. I've heard that it's changed a lot. But when I was there, there were quite a few shops that were like Vera's, you know, like kind of forgotten, really quiet and dark. And you can just tell that it's had, you know, they've had like decades of memories there. And so I really wanted to set a story in one of these shops that have just kind of been forgotten by time. And then I also wanted the shop to be something that the younger generation could work with and help to restore. So that was a very important thing to me as I was writing it.
Well, the shop almost feels like another character in the story. Mm-hmm. Is it in your mind?
Yeah, definitely, because it just has so many, so much history. There are a lot of parts about it, like all of the different ingredients. And I thought of like every ingredient kind of having a story of its own, in a sense. So yeah, for sure.
So one of the really sad backstories is the backstory of Oliver. We could also talk about Julia. Mm-hmm. You're kind of surrounding her with characters who are a little broken in some ways, that, you know, mm-hmm. Oliver's a little broken, Julia's a little broken, Santa's a little broken. So talk about the decision to have these characters, these suspects, to have a little brokenness about them.
So first of all, they each really needed a motivation to kill Marshall. So I wasn't really thinking about them being broken, but very naturally, because they had that motivation, I was kind of like, well, why were they motivated to kill Marshall? So with Oliver, it was because Marshall was just awful to him throughout his entire life, even from back when they were kids. And nobody knew that Marshall was this abusive sibling, you know, because everyone else was so taken by Marshall's charm. And same with Julia, who's Marshall's wife. So she's just kind of like, I didn't want Marshall to Marshall's abuse towards her to be like a very overt one. I wanted it to be like a very subtle kind of gaslighting, you know, over years and years in like a very like gently manipulating her to the point where she had no self-confidence. She was just completely dependent on him for everything. So all of these things, they really came about very naturally from me wanting to give them a motive.
When you write characters, do the characters take control of the pen? Or should I say the fingers on the typewriter or the fingers on the keyboard, whichever one it is?
Yeah, on the keyboard for sure. Yes and no, because nowadays I outline my books very meticulously. I have like a chapter by chapter outline before I start writing the book. So I already know exactly what needs to happen. But what I don't know is what their voice would sound like. So with Vera, I knew that she was going to be like this sassy, elderly Chinese auntie character. But I didn't know how like she was going to behave and her thoughts, you know, how she was like, I didn't know she was going to be that her horoscope was going to be the pig and not the rooster. You know, that only came out when I started writing.
Do you dream about your characters when you're in the middle of writing a novel? Do they ever enter your dreams?
No. Oh, no. That feels like such a failing on my part. Like, why haven't I dreamt about them? Wow. This is a new life goal.
So when you started working on the novel, how long did it take you to get that first draft done? And when writing the first draft, were there any major changes you made to the characters when you went to your second draft?
So I used to take like about 2 months to finish drafting a manuscript. But with Vera, because I was in such a hurry, I took 1 month to get halfway through the book. And then I went to a hotel for like 3 nights and finished the second half over the course of 3 days. So with Vera, it took me like 4.5 weeks to write. And that was the most amazing experience. And ever since then, that's how I've been writing my books. You know, I get to about 40,000 words and then I check into a hotel and finish the second half of the book at the hotel in like 3 days. So it's really cut down on my writing time from like 2 months to a month. Highly recommend it. I love it. Like I come home feeling so rejuvenated and like I've done nothing but, you know, fed my creative soul. So I just adore it. Also, it's like time away from the kids, which I really need.
So there's gratitude to your husband.
Oh yeah, for sure. Cause he's so supportive and he's like, oh, this is so worth doing. Cause I mean, you shaved down a whole month's work into 3 days. That's amazing.
Absolutely. So what is the drink that keeps you going? Mine is quad espresso with soy milk extra hot. What is your drink?
Oh, that sounds so good. Mine is Asian guilt. Nothing keeps me going quite like it. I mean, I usually get like a latte because coffee here is so strong. I don't know what they put in their coffee, but oh my gosh, you know, if I get more than a single shot, I am like shaking, you know, and I don't get that with like American coffee.
So were there any characters that you had to make major changes to? Talk about that.
No, I used to have to edit really extensively when I first started writing, but I've written, I want to say like 16 books by now. So I've gotten a lot better at making sure that everything is in place before I actually start drafting. So now my first drafts are generally pretty clean, and knock on wood, you know, we've only really worked on like pacing issues or like plot holes, but nothing that is like so major, you know, that I needed to work on.
So are there any writers that you have found deeply inspiring or books?
Yeah. So I used to think that novels had to take like at least 3 years to write. I don't know why. Like, I just had it in mind that books take a long time to write. Then I really got into Sir Terry Pratchett's books, his, you know, Discworld novels. And I noticed that he was coming out with a new book every 6 months. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You know, he comes out with like two books a year. And that made me realize that, you know, books can be written fast or books can be written slow. And that's completely fine. And writing it fast doesn't mean that it's lacking quality or anything, because obviously Terry Pratchett's books are so brilliant, so complex.
I've only read about 15 of those Discworld books. That's about
yeah.
So yeah, fantasy, you're a fantasy fan.
I am, because I read a lot of fantasy, and my first book actually was a fantasy. It didn't sell. My first two books, actually, come to think of it. And neither one sold to a publishing house, but I am going to be writing fantasy next, I think. Because those stories, even though they didn't sell, they're still in my head, you know. I'm like, the plot was good. It's just that my writing wasn't good enough at the time.
So talk a bit about how you have improved your writing over the years.
So I write really fast, and originally I started writing fast because of my like anxiety, because like when I write slow, there's this horrible voice in my head that's just like, oh, this is terrible. No one is going to want to read this. Wow, the plot is so boring. The characters are so unlikable, you know, on and on and on. And that's why I started writing fast, was kind of to outrun that voice and not give it like a chance to really take root and then make me give up on the manuscript. The more I wrote fast, the more books I wrote, the more I saw like, oh, okay, you know, I really skimped on the setting here, and I should really like slow down and flesh out the scene. Or, you know, oh, I did not fully flesh out this character, and I should really do them justice. So through the sheer volume of words that I have written, I think, you know, I learn so much with every book. And that's partly why I like writing in different genres, is because each genre is a new challenge and helps me grow as a writer.
Do you write every day?
When I'm drafting, I write every weekday. So I like to treat it as a job. So it's like Monday to Friday, whether or not I'm feeling it, I definitely have to write. And then I take weekends off. That's when I'm drafting. But right now I am in between books. And when I'm in between books, then no, I don't write at all.
So you're in between books. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading? I just finished... I finished reading a manuscript from a friend of mine. I was critiquing it. I just sent off my edit letter like a couple days ago. So I'm not sure what I'm going to be reading next.
Are there any crime fiction writers that you read regularly or have been reading over the years?
Yeah, so I would say Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl. I've read all of her books. because she's amazing. Another writer that I, you know, it's, she's like an auto buy for me is Tana French. I don't know how to pronounce her.
Tana French. Yeah. The Irish novels.
In Dublin.
Dublin. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That whole series. Yes. I'm a fan of Tana French too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how she like, she knows so much about police procedure. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Like she must either be like a lawyer or a cop or I don't know. She knows so much about it and it's amazing. Her writing is so beautiful.
So you went to Oxford. There's a novel mm-hmm. that was set in Oxford that came out last year. Did you have a chance to pick it up? Babel?
Babel. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I got an advanced copy. Oh my gosh, that was amazing. So I was actually reading that during my writing retreat for Vera Wang. So, you know, when I was taking breaks from writing, I would read Babel and it's so brilliant, isn't it? It's one of those books where you pick it up and it's just so obvious that the author is an actual genius. You know, you can just tell like she's just so much smarter than everyone.
Yeah, but you went to Oxford too.
I know. Like, I would say it's so obvious that she's even smarter than the average, you know, Oxford student. And I know because I went.
Well, it's an incredible critique of colonialism, imperialism, and then there's sort of the liminal spaces, people of mixed mm-hmm. race. And have in that particular, I mean, the book, amazing. She's just mm-hmm. a genius straight out. I've read two of her other books. She's just a genius, but you could be a genius, actually still not be a good writer.
Oh,
she's
a
literary genius, I would call her.
Yeah, yeah, she is. And I always feel so intimidated talking to her because I'm like, oh, she's going to know that I'm really, really stupid compared to her.
Can I tell you a story?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the author Terry McMillan?
No.
So Terry McMillan writes popular fiction, black fiction. She became famous in mm-hmm. the 90s. She wrote a book called Waiting to Exhale. They made a movie out of it. Whitney Houston starred it. It was hugely successful, made the New York Times, incredibly successful. Mm-hmm. She wrote a lot of, she had another book they made a movie out of called Sell It Got Her Groove Back. So she mm-hmm. was being interviewed. I was listening to a podcast of her being interviewed and she was talking about Toni Morrison. And she just mm-hmm. talked about how scared she was of Toni Morrison because of how great a writer Toni Morrison was and how she was sort mm-hmm. of intimidated by Toni Morrison. She was like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. Toni Morrison. So, you know, just these, you know, there are just writers who are like icons. They're just any other iconic writers for you? Any others? Living or dead?
Any others? I really feel very lucky that my generation has R.F. Kuang, who's the writer of Babel. I was telling my husband, like, she's such an amazing voice to have right now. It's such a privilege to be existing in the same space as her and to watch her carve out a space for diverse voices. And so I would say, you know, I just have so much admiration for other authors who are kind of doing the same thing for the rest of us, because I really did not have a chance to write Chinese Indonesian characters before, for example, Crazy Rich Asians. You know, Kevin Kwan, he came along and he put Southeast Asia on the map, because before that, nobody knew what's Southeast Asia. You know, like if you mention Asian, then people generally think East Asian, like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Taiwanese. And then Kevin Kwan came along, he put Singapore on the map. And before we knew it, doors were being opened for other Southeast Asians. Like I had a friend, she's Filipino, and she was writing about Japanese characters because she didn't think that anyone would want to read about Filipino culture. And now she is writing Filipino stories. And so I think there are quite a lot of us who are doing that. So I would say like Kevin Kwan is definitely an icon in our eyes.
Well, Jesse Q. Sutanto, author of Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers. This is really a delightful book. It is a page turner. I am now a fan. So I can't wait till you get
so
your
much.
Next book out. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.